Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody to Bottom Up Radio Network. Here to, from this point on, we'll refer to it simply as BURN, because I love acronyms and I like sounding like an asshole. So welcome to BURN, everybody. This is your host, Rabble Rouser, your co-host, Rabble Rouser, and I believe the other co-host is on the line. Are you there?
The G20-sided dice, biatches.
What's happening? All right, so this is our first show together on this station. Some of you may remember Rabble Rouse Radio before, where it was basically just me arguing with a few idiots that would call into the show. But now I got Travis to argue with the idiots, too. And we also had some really great guests, and we're going to have some good guests here in the future. But what's the point of our show, G20?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some shit, and talk about some other shit, and invite people to come and talk some shit.
Are we going to talk some shit about the other shit? Or
Yeah, we'll shit on the shit that we shit. Well, you know, our whole main purpose here is to put a little bit of information out there to anybody who wants to listen, and look at everything from a perspective of, let's talk about freedom. That's what I want to do. I want to sing about freedom.
Oh, Jesus Christ, that's like a right-wing fucking go-to word, man. This is about freedom! I was like Alex Jones, man. This is the new world order coming down on us all. This is about free-loving patriots. No, this show is not about patriots in any way whatsoever.
I'm gonna convert some fucking church hymns to some sick freedom music. That's gonna be awesome.
Nice. We're gonna shoot some headlines out. We're gonna play This Week in Radical History by my comrade Mike Cannon. And if you like what you hear with This Week in Radical History, shoot him an email at themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. You can also, if you're a Facebooker, you can join the Bottom Up Radio Network on Facebook. I don't know how you would find it, but you can search for it, I suppose. The Bottom Up Radio Network. And I believe you can be followed on Twitter of some sort. Is that what I hear?
Well, if you look for Liberty Travis on Twitter, you can find me, and we'll be my lovely wife and technical master is going to be monitoring the Twitter page and is also going to be posting what we're talking about so that you can be dialed in via all the coolest, hippest, newest networking systems. Really fucking hip, by the way.
I have no idea what a Twitter is, and Liberty Travis. Liberty, that's such a pretty name.
I have a beautiful name, and I just want to say you just discovered Facebook a week ago, and you're fucking in that shit. You are in it.
I run it. I took over. You know, I don't know. I
fucking knew it.
So, okay, well. This is getting to a point where we need to move on to something. I guess we should announce that we are going to be taking calls tonight, and the main topic of discussion in the second hour is going to be I don't have a drum roll sound effect in there, so healthcare. Possibly it's something you don't hear anybody talking about. That's why we decided to talk about
it. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody even gives a shit about healthcare anymore.
It's not getting any headlines at all. It's kind of like when Michael Jackson died. They really just they should have focused on that a little bit, I think.
I wish they would still focus on it, by the way. I mean, fucking Michael Jackson, bro.
Well, as soon as I stopped hearing about Michael Jackson died, all of a sudden all these people were getting killed in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And
fuck them. They're poor.
What a bummer. What a bummer, really. You know, I mean, I work all day. I don't want to come home and turn on the talking heads and hear them tell me how bad things are, you know? I want to know that Michael Jackson's
dead. We bomb more people. Ooh, people are dying. I want to know what the fuck is up with Michael Jackson's kids. Are they fucking cyborgs? Did he grow them? You know?
Right.
I deserve to know. Is it public knowledge, man?
Yeah, and, you know, it, really, a headline like, a soldier dies, I mean, isn't that kind of like saying a barber cuts hair?
I think it's exactly the same thing, actually.
I mean,
I know a lot of barbers.
Are in a war, and that's what happens in a war. So not to demean the soldiers at all, because the soldiers are actually the greatest asset to the resistance of war. They're the only ones that can actually stop fighting the war. Liberals in the streets with their placards and their ballots voting for Obama sure didn't stop a war. So it's going to come down to the soldiers at some point.
Power to the soldiers, particularly the ones in Germany, you know, because they're doing a lot.
Yeah, please run out and rent Valkyrie, for Christ's sake. Somebody go rent Valkyrie for every 2 hours of Tom Cruise. And that'll make anybody want to kill the leader.
Tom Cruise and an eye patch. That's sick.
Yeah, well, I mean, Johnny Depp did it, so he had to step it up a little bit. You know?
I know, he's always got to steal from Johnny Depp.
I going to look like a pirate, I'm going to fight the Nazis. Yeah. Great. Get on Oprah with that one.
He will, and he'll do a dance, and it'll be awesome, and they'll talk about that for a month. It'll be sweet, dude. I can't wait.
Uh-oh, what was that sound?
Was that fucking drum roll?
Oh, I do believe that is the sound of the pirated stolen U2. I want to make an announcement as we play this song. This song is meant to lead us into the headlines, and we're going to read the headlines. And I think it's pretty clever why, because he says that he can't believe the news today. But I do want to make it known that I do not support Bono. In fact, I hate Bono. There's the line. But I figured if I hate him enough, I could steal his song. So this is going to lead us into the headlines. Also, in the chat room on here, if you have a headline pertinent to what we're going to be talking about, throw the link in there. And we're going to be throwing links to all the stuff in there, too. But today is Sunday, August the 16th. Is that correct? Which one? Am I alone?
No, I'm here. Sorry. I was a fan. I was putting out my cigarettes and reading about healthcare. Oh, shit.
Cigarettes and healthcare.
So is music going to play the whole time, or...?
No, I just wanted to get into say Sunday Bloody Sunday, actually. Okay, so let's get to the headlines. You want to hit it off, G20?
Yeah, I'll start. Okay, let's see. I got some good stuff. I got some rich, rich stuff. All right, let's talk about Gates, Robert Gates. Everybody likes Robert Gates. I think he's a good guy. I think he only has our best interest at heart. So, this is in the AP. Read this today. Gates has said it is, a mystery how soon we will be leaving Afghanistan. He says, defeating the Taliban and Al-Qaeda will take, quote, a few years, with success on a larger scale in the desperately poor country, a much longer proposition. Ergo, we're going to keep bombing those brown people till they're dead. In the intelligence business, we always used to categorize information in two ways, secrets and mysteries. That sounds like the X-Files. That's fucking kind of cool, actually. Fucking aliens. By the way, there's a guy who believes there's a spaceship buried underneath Iraq, and that's why we went to war with Iraq. And I sign on for that.
that's what my soundboard has to say about the spaceship buried under Iraq.
In a report released earlier this week, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee warned the Obama administration that unanswered questions about lingering U.S. involvement in Afghanistan could frustrate the public. I doubt it. Nobody gives a shit about Afghanistan. They're stoked. We're going after a villain. He's a bad guy. It's like Superman.
I got an unanswered question. Ask any American where Afghanistan is on a freaking map.
And they'll point.
And once they can answer that, then we can talk about going to war there. How about
that? That's right. That's right. All right. Second up, BBC News reports. Iran admits 4,000 June detainees. Authorities in Iran say 4,000 people were detained in protest that followed June's disputed presidential election, many more than previously stated. 69 people were killed in the violence following the 12 June poll. It's actually turning out to be more than that. In disputing the actions, there was a quote from, who's this fucking guy? Some guy whose name I can't pronounce. It doesn't even matter. There was no ambiguity in the trial procedures, and there was no pressure to get confessions from the people on trial. I'm going to go ahead and call bullshit on that one. Torture is pretty popular in that part of the world, and in ours, actually. I think they just turned to stonings instead of waterboarding. So, you know, it's just cultural differences.
Yay. Well, I mean, stonings isn't torture. It's biblical.
That's true. That's true. And the Bible is inspired by God.
That's right.
All right. The Herald Tribune reports today, actually August 4th. What's the date today? Today's not August 4th. It's a few days ago. Fuck off. All right. Iraq censorship laws move ahead. Our Constitution respects freedom of thought and freedom of expression, but that should come with respect for society as a whole and for moral behavior, says Taher Nazer Alamoud, Iraq's deputy cultural minister. It's not easy to balance security and democracy. It's a tightrope walker. No, it's not like being a tightrope walker. Being a tightrope walker is like being a tightrope walker, okay? This shit is about just keeping information from your people so they'll shut the fuck up and not question what you're doing. So we're doing really well in Afghanistan and Iraq, so I'm really, really pretty happy about that.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about you know, the Iraq war is, you know, with this current criminal in office there, the Obama, I guess his name is, he never once said he was against war. And hundreds of thousands of people that came out to support him, I saw them. I saw them at the DNC, and I saw them in the streets at these gatherings, all had, you know, peace buttons on and end the war in Iraq now. And he never said he was going to stop war. He said he was going to move war to the neighboring countries. Meanwhile, the war is still going on in Iraq. It's still there, and we're moving this war further. This is the most empirical war that I could think of, and this isn't George Bush anymore. People want to blame the war on George Bush. There's no way you can blame the war on the Republicans. There's absolutely no way, because we have a Democrat in office, and all you liberals out there that think that this made some kind of a difference, you got to be fucking kidding me. I mean, did you hear what the man said? This is the one promise that he's kept. The one thing that he's – and this is the one promise he could keep, is that they will keep killing poor people all over the world.
You know, it's interesting. Today I was walking to get coffee, and I saw a house with two posters on it. One was the picture of the president, the new guy, staring off into space philosophically and looking very saint-like. And right next to that was a sign that said, "Support our troops, bring them home now." And I thought that was kind of interesting, because last time I checked, in his first week in office, he ordered a drone strike against Pakistan, killed some civilians in a village, and there's been several more since then. And with the growing presence of America in Afghanistan and the continued war in Iraq, I just thought that was just lovely fucking irony. Lovely fucking irony.
Oh, man. Foreign relations. You know, I think we need to stop thinking about it in terms of foreign relations. We need to rename it, because it's not foreign relations. It's just business. It's business ethics. That's all it is. We've gone beyond this. I hear a lot of people with a lot of anger right now, and they're, you know, they want to resist, and it's you know, for the bulk of it that I hear, it's conservative right wingers, but at least they're resisting at this point, which is good, because, you know, during the Bush administration, you couldn't get a Democrat to say the things that these right wingers are saying. You know, I mean, how often did you see a liberal Democrat going to a town hall meeting with a loaded gun during the Bush administration? You know, never. You know, these fucking hippies out there with their Birkenstocks and their granola thought they could meditate away their problems or vote them away. But these right wingers, you know, I got to give them some cred. The right wingers have generally been, you know, the most radical of the two-party system. Whether or not it's radical in the right way is not the question. I mean, they're definitely radical. They definitely push forth and achieve the things they want to achieve. But, you know, I hear them keep getting stuck on this whole Americanism, this whole idea of American exceptionalism, you know, like, not in America, not in my country, you know. Well, why not, you know?
Well,
why not here?
It's interesting that, you know, when I've brought up the drone strikes to individuals who were anti-war and supported Obama, the response is, you know, sometimes kind of compelling. It's well, you know, we had to do it. We had to keep those guys happy. So apparently it's not murder as long as it's a campaign promise that you're fulfilling.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, this goes out to all those liberal Democrats who are excusing Obama there.
Yeah.
There you go, liberal Democrats. It's been about 7 months since your man got into office. Can you tell me one or two things that about this man that you didn't know before? No, you can't. Not a bit. You know why? Because you don't give a shit. That's why. Because you got your puppet up there. You got a man that can ease your white guilt. You have a man that can ease your liberal guilt, and you got a man that tells you it's okay to spend millions of dollars on ridiculous, stupid shit. And by the way, America apparently can exist on clean coal. You know, we can burn coal and we can make it clean. I have an ashtray sitting in front of me that has, I had been smoking my hookah, and it has ashes from 4 lumps of coal, right?
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't want to breathe in that ashtray. I wouldn't want to mix it with some soda water and drink it down. And I sure the fuck wouldn't even consider, you know, spooning it out with a spoon. I wouldn't bathe in it. Is it clean? You
know, Dude, just run that shit through a Brita, bro.
Oh, it's fucking ridiculous the way these people think.
Yeah, very. Week in review from the New York Times, healthcare in Britain, expat goes for a checkup. Apparently, Stephen Hawking was quoted as having a terrible time with his healthcare program in Britain, and he said it's actually okay. And
Wait, did he say it's okay, or did he say,
it's okay?
Fuck off. And I would love to hear Stephen Hawking swear. Comedy movies do it all the time. I want to hear it for real. Somebody catch it and please fucking YouTube it. All right, just give me that. If you give me nothing else, I want him swearing.
I still think Stephen Hawking is a construct of Steven Spielberg.
No shit. What if he was? I'm really into the idea of robots and having robot armies and shit. So don't get me started.
It's like guerrilla theater for, you know, at that point. You know, let's make E.T. look real.
So the writer says some of it's good, some of it's bad. I'm an American. I've lived in Britain and I've had some good times and I've had some bad times. Lots of laughter, lots of tears. Which is essentially the case in point with healthcare, as long as the state is involved in it, is sometimes it works for some people, sometimes it doesn't work for other people. As long as it works for enough of the voters, that's all that matters. And finally, Strange Bedfellows, FoxNews.com, and we all love Fox, by the way. We all love, I heart Fox. Industry groups join an effort to push healthcare reform. The common thread for these Strange Bedfellows? Self-interest, observers say. Either you're sitting down at the table or you're on the menu, said Ernest Istook, a fellow at the Conservative Heritage Foundation. And in a statement, the senior vice president for Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, one of the coalition members, said the groups came together, and I love that, they came together, God bless them, because they share the goal of improving the economy through healthcare reform. We believe that without healthcare reform, healthier economy can happen if we have a wealthier or a healthier workforce. Basically, what that translates to is we're trying to get involved because we want to make some motherfucking money, bitches. Shit. And finally, faith leaders campaign for healthcare reform and release TV ad. This is printed by Believe Out Loud, Houston Belief. What a gay name for a news reporter, by the way. Believe Out Loud. Fucking douchebags. But interesting story they put out about this different coalition of interfaith people putting out a thing saying that all of God's children need to be covered. So essentially, Jesus wants us to get health care for murderers and thieves. Thank you, Jesus. We appreciate it.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and piggyback on your headlines there.
That's my headlines.
I'm going to piggyback with some more headlines. Well, you're on the health care thing there, which we're going to be talking about in our second hour at length. But I got a great one here that just it really showcases Obama and just how the state works when it comes to these things. The headline, I'm going to throw the link up in the chat room really quick. Let me go ahead and do that. Boom, there's your article, everybody. It's in the chat room. By the way, if you're listening and you're not in the chat room, you can get in the chat room really easily just by starting an account on Blog Talk Radio. It's really easy. It's quick and it's free, and you can chat in the chat room. Nobody's chatting right now, which is odd. But anyway, back to the story. Obama says too much emphasis on healthcare protests. And apparently Barack Obama says that news organizations are putting too much emphasis on the scenes of hostile protesters, because he hasn't seen much of this, apparently, he says. He says that everybody he's encountered who disagrees with him has been very very kind, very cordial, and he even says...
Of course they are. They're his staff.
Yeah, and the hard question that he talks about getting, he says, you know, I got a question from a guy that says you cannot tell us how you're going to pay for this. You are saving here. You're saving over there. You're going to take a little money here. You're going to take a little money there, but you have no money. The only way you're going to get that money is to raise our taxes. You said you would not. And the president agreed with the questioner that more money would be needed for programs. He says, you're absolutely right. I can't cover another 46 million people for free. You're right. I can't do that. So we're going to have to find some resources. $3 trillion military budget a month. There's some resources right there. There's a lot. How about $30 billion to Israel in the next 10 years? There's some resources.
How about a request for $68 billion for more Afghanistan nonsense?
Right, goes right through. Boom, no questions. What about the Baxter vaccine that gets no-bid contracts? We don't even know. They haven't released how many billions of dollars that's going to be worth to Donald Rumsfeld. Right? So he's making these deals with Big Pharma. Takes the $80 billion cut that pharma's going to take. That's what the big headline was. Obama has the pharma take the $80 billion cut, you know. $80 billion, according to research done by somebody who I highly trust, Greg Palast, very good investigative journalist, did the math on what we're going to be spending in the next 3 years on pharmaceuticals. And the $80 billion over the next 3 years that he was talking about accounts for all of 2%, which if you saw a sign that says 2% off, you'd laugh your ass off, right? That's not a bargain, number one. Number two, it's not really $80 billion that they're going to lose. It's that they're not going to raise it more than $80 billion with the coming insurance plan. So
yeah.
So I don't understand where the profit margin is there, and they're upping their consumer rate, you know, from 25, 30% of the population to 100% of the population. So they're going to be raking it in, these pharmaceutical companies are. But apparently that $80 billion is supposed to make a big difference.
And if I could add to that, part of the way these type of things are funded is over there's a few different ways. Obviously through increases in taxes, but that's actually a smaller amount. What they do is they borrow money from poorer countries because that's apparently what we do, and we don't ever pay them back. And they borrow money, they inflate the currency through inflation. The public ends up being taxed twice. And incrementally over time, taxes for everybody, not just the rich, for everybody will be increased slowly enough over time so that by the time in the next 20 years and we're actually feeling it, we'll be too old and we'll be into a couple of new presidents by then and we will have forgotten. That's the way these systems function in a quiet enough way to keep us obedient and to keep us kind of ignorant of how exactly the money's coming in.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that deeper even more in the second hour for sure. I would say that there's a conspiracy theory here, but this isn't a conspiracy theory of something that theorizing an event. This is a conspiracy. These companies are working together, which is that is the definition of a conspiracy. They are conspiring together. So maybe we shouldn't call it a conspiracy theory. Maybe we should call it a business theory. I don't know, but we're going to talk about all that with the healthcare thing. I want to jump into the next headline I got here. Sebi was on swine flu. We're preparing for the worst, is what she says here. The Human Services Secretary, Kathleen Sebulis, said Sunday that it would be Thanksgiving before everybody got the H1N1 vaccine. This put out by Baxter, and I'm going to hit on that in just a second. But it says that they're playing out a whole variety of scenarios, and they're preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. But while she says that, she does say later on that the children are going to need the shot first because this is such a deadly disease, and she's calling it a children's flu. That's the new name for the H1N1. It's a children's flu. Although we
sounds
were told
much more
that,
cuddlier that way. Doesn't that sound sweet, a children's flu?
Right, and it sounds so much more dangerous. Like, oh, but it's your children. You know, that's the way they always get you. Is like any rule they want to pass is like, oh, you like smoking a joint on the weekends? What about your children? Yeah. Oh, so you like cooking out in the backyard on the grill, you know, you're getting some meat going. What about your children? No, it's the most ridiculous hook that they ever give for anything. And, you know, it's the scare tactics that are being used here. And Obama's saying, you know, don't focus on the protests. Don't focus on the protests. Meanwhile, on whitehouse.gov, go to the blog section. There's a blog on there called Facts or Stubborn Things where Obama's people are requesting that everybody send in an email to flag@whitehouse.gov with information about anybody that's talking badly about the health care reform. They're asking us to spy on each other. They just want the information. You know, we just want to know, they said. We just, no, it's nothing sinister. We just want to know.
So if anybody who's on live chat right now could give us their names, phone numbers, and addresses, Michael and I promise that it's only with your best interest at heart that we're going to give them to the White House. So just please start now. And your credit card numbers, just because of the fees. Don't ask.
Yeah, no. I mean, if you ask, that's not patriotic. Pay no attention to the protesters. Just get their name and address and send it to me. We'll take care of it all. You know, somebody asked me, how are they supposed to deal with somebody who's spreading lies then if they don't have this thing set up? And I was like, well, you tell the truth. I mean, it's that simple. You know, you be honest, and you don't have to worry about anybody lying because you're a public figure, and this is a public program. And if you're telling the truth and it all washes out in the end, then it doesn't matter if somebody's lying about it because they're lying. But if you're so scared about people dissenting from your ideas, then there's obviously something to worry about there, and I think people should take that into account. So this article says that they're going to be leading the vaccinations in our school systems. Does this sound familiar to anybody? Does this ring bells of what happened before when German denunciations started with school children and any programs that began in fascist regimes? They always went for the children first. Why? Because the children, when brought into a school system, they're segregated from their family, they're lumped into one place, and they're malleable. You can teach children things, and you can use them as tools, and that's exactly what this state's doing. I mean, never mind that parents go crazy every time you drive past a McDonald's because a kid's screaming for McDonald's. Just wait till the kid's screaming about vaccinations or patriotism or the health care plan or Obama. And if you say something bad, the kid can tell the school teacher, oh, well, my dad doesn't like this, and boom, what's going to happen next, you know? These schools are not places for education. They're places for control. It's just that simple. They're making it more and more clear. You know, it's amazing to me how blunt and how in the open fascism is becoming in this country.
Well, as long as you code it, you know, and this is proved out of time immemorial, is you know, as long as you start it with something like we're protecting you, that resonates with people because people in an uncertain world and an uncertain universe want to feel like there's someone in charge protecting them. And that's a very strong language to use, and it resonates with a lot of people. And, you know, look at all the other systems in public education where the we're indoctrinated early to learn that good white people came here and had a great, awesome dinner with the natives here, and everybody was happy. We're indoctrinated to essentially pray to the flag.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up with the natives because they were told they were being protected too. They were given blankets to keep them warm from the harsh winters that they were going to experience. And those blankets were infected with what? Smallpox, one of the deadliest diseases to ravage the native populations. And on that note, polio surge in Nigeria after vaccine virus mutates. That's right, folks. Polio. Remember that disease that maybe your mom might have a scar on her arm for because she got vaccinated in 1952? Yeah, it's been dead for over 50 years. But it's resurged in Africa. Gee, Africa's never been a stomping grounds for white people to try out their bullshit, has it? That's news to me. But in Nigeria, the vaccine apparently that they were given for polio has turned. It's turned on people, and it's giving everybody polio. There's an outbreak there. It's ridiculous. It says here in the article, for years, myths have abounded about vaccines, that they were the Western world's plan to sterilize Africans or give them AIDS. That's a myth, apparently, huh? That's a myth? Yeah, look up Baxter and HIV and ask yourself why Baxter has been wrapped up in the court systems for the last 10 years because of a hemophiliac virus, a vaccine that they sent out, a medication that was tainted with HIV, but they didn't sell it in America. No, they sold 12,000 units of it in France and in Japan and three or four other countries. I don't have them listed in front of me, but these people were infected with HIV from Baxter, which is, by the way, the company that got the no-bid contract for the vaccines for the H1N1 virus that we're going to be getting in the fall. And the vaccine that they have for that was apparently, the patent was applied for a year before the breakout of this surprise virus. This is, you might not be following what I'm saying here, but they're saying in this news report on Associated Press that there's been myths about it. Myths. Well, this is fact. This is fact that nobody has faced charges in Baxter, but there's people who have been infected with HIV who have pressed charges on the international courts. They've tried to take Baxter to court. There's been recognized that this is where all these people received the HIV strain from, was from a Baxter medication. Baxter faces no charges from it. And now the media, big fucking surprise, is using language like myth when talking about the HIV virus and vaccinations. Apparently, this vaccine that they got has mutated and turned to polio, and now it's killing people.
Man, but I'm glad I don't live there. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad I don't live there. Once again,
oh my God.
it's better to be me.
Yeah, they. I guess you know, it's their fault for having to get vaccinated. I mean, what country would allow their people to get vaccinated by a company with that track record, right?
I mean, it's for the children.
Right.
We're just protecting
for the
children.
Children.
We're protecting your children. Polio will help kill your children because they're going to have an unfortunately unhappy adult life. So we're just doing a flavor.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. So off the healthcare.
I had to open up a beer. That shit was so upsetting to me. And I'm going to smoke another cigarette. I'm going to drink and smoke because I'm pissed about polio.
Right. Well, polio is upsetting. It's and you know, it's a really stupid sport too.
It's not just it's not just a water sport anymore.
pool party at the Rumsfelds, water sports with Donald. Okay, so in other headlines, I got the resistance reports here. I think it's important while we're using the mass media outlets, which is where we're getting this stuff. The reason we go to the mass media outlets to get these headlines to talk about is because, well, they're funny, and they write
funny.
Their own jokes. You know, just by existing, it's absolutely hilarious to anybody who wants to critically analyze the bullshit that we not only accept, but that we gladly pay for. The resistance reports are dedicated to those headlines that kind of slip through the cracks that showcase levels of resistance. And I'm going to try to focus on U.S. resistance because that's where we live. We could talk about Palestinian resistance. We could talk about southern Mexico and Chiapas. We could talk about Argentina. We could talk about Honduras. We could talk about all these things. But I think it's important to note that resistance takes place here, too. And in Chino Prison, apparently, there was a riot last week that has just been out of control. And the prisoners are fighting back against the prison system that they're in. And the reason they're fighting is because of a mishandling of funds. It's an overcrowded prison. Some interesting stuff here. They give a little bit of the history of Chino Prison. And apparently, they faced this problem in the 1930s as well. And so they made Chino Prison into a minimum security prison, brought in a new warden. And the warden apparently walked the prisoners to the fence and showed them how to safely climb the fence without getting cut on the barbed wire to escape. And he said to them, if you escape, though, and you get caught, your sentence is going to be much harsher and you're going to go to a maximum security prison. So I think this is really, really indicative of how power works. Yeah, you can get free if you want, but watch it. You know, Obama said it many times. He said it many times. You know, we need a bottom-up uprising. We need grassroots uprisings. But watch your ass, because if you get a grassroots uprising going, you know, we're going to get your information in our little email hotline.
And
don't pay
any
attention
also,
to those grassroots organizers.
I'd also like to add that easily, you know, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I would wager that 3/4 of the people in there are in those cages for the state's drug war as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the prison system is a more direct form of slavery than wage slavery. And it's definitely there to facilitate the labor needs of certain corporations. These people are used as fodder for corporate funding.
Yeah, Hewlett Packard, great computers, but they're slave drivers too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what, you know, people always want to point to Bill Gates as being this, like, Well, he's got an industry that doesn't hurt anybody, right? I mean, you want to talk about, you know, corporations can't be earth friendly. Well, I mean, how damaging is a computer to our environment? He's not a bad guy for making money on computers, is he? Well, computers are made of plastic. Plastic's made of petroleum. We're in a petroleum war in Iraq. Millions dead in Iraq. Iraqi citizens, not to mention the countless number of Americans who have died and will die in that war. So petroleum-based product right there, number one. Number two, the tech industry itself relies upon satellites and antennas being the sole source of the redirection of the migratory birds. This is a study that's been taking place for the last 20 years, and they're showing that these antennas for cell phones and Internet devices are causing these migratory birds to die off because they lose their tracking senses. The bee population has been greatly decimated, not to mention the wage slaves and the real slaves in the prison system that work for these fuckers. You know, it's not that hard to put these pieces together.
And I'm fucking using a cell phone right now. I'm such a shitbag.
Well, we're both using a computer, you know. I mean, that's the thing, you know. That's the grab right there. That's the barb on the hook, you know. But, biting my hand feeds them. What?
Do we have a sound effect for that?
A sound effect for
our outrage over the computer industry? I want a sound effect. That's perfect. Thank you.
No, it's not done. Longest vomit in history. I got one more quick one I want to touch on in the notes here, and then we're gonna go to a quick song and maybe take a caller and then go into This Week in Radical History. The last one I want to talk about is for anybody in the San Francisco area that might be listening in. Don't count on taking the bus to work this week, because according to this article that I picked up here from the San Francisco Gate, the BART employees are threatening strike, and apparently this is more than just a threat. They are actually moving on to securing a strike, which I gotta say is fucking awesome. However, in the historically most liberal and socialist city in America, the people of the city are pissed. Betty L. says, "I hope that all BART riders today will confront the workers and tell them your opinion. Yell, scream. In fact, it may be time for anarchy. If all the BART riders stormed the entry gates and refused to pay, what could they do? Arrest 340,000 people? I agree with her. The last part, she says, storm the gates and refuse to pay. I don't think the strikers would stop you if you did that, because it's not about not letting people ride. It's about not generating income. So good job, Betty. You didn't even know it, but you had another tool there you can add to the resistance. But Passion Champ says, are you unemployed? Show up Monday at noon at BART headquarters and protest the fact that top-scale BART workers earn over $100,000 a year, including benefits, and they want more. Okay, a strike is not the top employees striking for more. A strike is all of the people on the bottom are going to be going on strike, probably because fuckers in the offices make over $100,000 with benefits, and they don't. Snippy says, I think our soldiers in Iraq might be safer next week than picketing BART workers. I'm not advocating violence, just noting the room temperature. My God. People, do you understand? If you want to be in solidarity in any way with your neighbors who are working there, don't go to fucking work next week. Shut it down. Shut the whole fucking thing down. Because when the general strike occurred in 1877, guess where the general strike came from? The hub of it was in St. Louis at the fucking rail yards. Because that transportation is the sole tool of consumerism that keeps this capitalism alive. It keeps the people rich. That's why we have the best highway system in North America, because it's commerce. It's military movement. It's commerce, all of it. It's for capital interest. You don't like what the country's doing, what the government's doing? You don't like the war? Then stop fucking paying for it right now. It's not just taxes. It's all of it. Support these fucking BART workers, everybody. And I'll tell you what. If I lived in San Francisco, I'd be out there on the picket lines with a fucking pipe, ready to take anybody out that was going to hurt any of these striking workers. I don't even care what their demands are. Any workers that go on strike, I fucking support them. I support them because fuck the boss.
And, you know, it's important to look at the BART situation as well as, and, you know, of course, we'll get to the healthcare fiasco in the second half. But this also relates to that, is that when you have a system set up wherein everyone is forced in some way, shape, or form to subsidize it, in some way, shape, or form to add to it, then everybody gets really mad when it doesn't go the way that they want it to. For example, I don't like the fact that I'm forced, if I'm going to work and work quote-unquote legitimately, I don't like the fact that I am forced to in any way add money to the war machine. I don't have a choice in that matter, and it makes me angry. And we have to consider things like this, the workers, the consumers, all humans involved are, this reaction is a natural byproduct of the system. The system is designed to produce these type of things because it keeps us busy. It keeps us distracted from the things that actually matter, which is eliminating the state. So, eat that.
That should be goal number one, definitely, is the elimination of the state. Not the upholding of it. Oh, what's that I hear?
Oh, snap. Is this our first caller?
Who's that speaking, please?
All right, so we got the Kinks telling us right now that it's party line time.
If this is a prank call, you're a dick.
That's the Kinks song Party Line, and that's our reminder that we do have open phone lines at this point. Phone number is 646-200-3974. You can call in at any time. We just want to ask that in the first part, let's try to keep the comments and stuff concise, and we'll have a little bit of banter. Try to help us keep on track. And then in the second half, we're getting some really heated shit. But we already have a caller online. I do believe it is the host of the Fightin' Cock Flyer website, one of the greatest Midwest voices of dissent that's not being recognized by any sort of major media outlet. So he started his own damn media. Everybody's Michael Cadell. Michael, how you doing, brother? Michael, you there?
He's like, fuck it, I'm out of here. This show sucks.
I see him on. Michael, I see your phone number on here. You're unmuted, brother. Are you there? Oh, he's probably taking a piss.
Is this our first official technical difficulty?
No, he's not talking. He should be on.
Our first caller didn't say shit.
So right, my first caller when I started the show last year was a drunk lady from Canada that apparently calls every show on Blog Talk Radio and says absolutely nothing worth meaning. That's pretty funny.
Wait a minute. Am I on
Michael, air? Yeah, we've been talking about you. You there, brother.
I just picked up on that. I had the phone on mute and was walking away. This crappy stuff out here in Kansas, I can hardly get on. I can't even listen to you live unless I call in. It's ridiculous out here.
Hold on.
Well, Michael, welcome to the show, man.
Well, hey, thank you. It's good to see. It's good to hear Michael Franklin on the air again. I really enjoy it, and I'm glad he's doing it again. That's real good. You know.
Well, Michael, meet Travis Eby. He's my co-host. G20 sided die. Right there.
Cool.
What's happening, brother?
All right, man. All right. Are you out in Oregon?
Yeah, I am, my man.
Cool. Modern communications, it goes east of the Mississippi River and stops abruptly on the west and then picks up again on the west coast. You know, out here we're still just getting over party lines, you know? I was sitting
That's
around.
What the song's about, party line.
Well, why don't you play it and I'll put it back on hold and I'll...
Since we got you on the line, why don't you give us a little bit of a report about what's happening in Kansas? I know you guys got a hotbed there of radical politics and right-wing conservatives. Kansas is as boring as it is to drive through. The politics of the place gets pretty fucking interesting.
Yeah, it's not really just a flyover zone, although to stand up out here, it's a pretty brave thing. The people that are cool, that are righteous and revolutionary, are the ones that are trying to make their lifestyle. One left winger once said compared it to an act of suicide to stand up and protest in Kansas because the Democrats are busy selling their buttholes to the corporations here, the coal industry, big energy,
What about the corn farmers that no longer own their own fields? They're owned by Monsanto.
Well, these corn farmers would never, first off, their pride is so far up in their gullet that they can't admit that Monsanto owns their ass. That's the problem. And most of the corn farmers are what Mao Zedong would call large landowners that probably, you know, if any, in any serious class struggle, holy shit, the thing's starting to work. Let me turn the thing down.
Hey, Michael. Michael, are you guys still on the dial-up internet out there in Kansas?
Whoa! All my neighbors have nothing but copper wire dial-up, and then I have a fancy-smancy satellite uplink.
Nice.
But unfortunately, when there's a storm front moving through, it cuts in and out real bad, and that's what's going on right now. It's just like everything else in Kansas. It changes with the weather from day to day, you know. If you don't like the weather today, just wait till tomorrow. It'll change. But, These corn farmers, the only sympathy I have for them is that I go around and I'm surrounded. I got 10 acres. I'm surrounded on 360 degrees around me with 8-foot corn fields all around me. And ironically, Mike, you might I've been doing research. These guys get up to $50,000 a year in federal payroll checks. They're the first to cuss. Excuse me, but I notice how you don't have any language restrictions. They're the first to cuss what they say, quote, the niggers and the welfare bums, okay, unquote.
Right, but they're the first to accept that government check.
That's right. They take
and they think. Well, they've been sold this idea that they're the ones supporting America. But Mike, let me ask you: you're surrounded by corn. How much of that corn could you eat and ingest properly?
None, not one bit. We tried it first year. I've been out here 10 years. First year, I said, "Look, honey, eat all that corn. We could eat all summer." Well, that shit, we went out there and picked some of it and boiled it. it was like starch. It was the worst piece of shit you could ever pick up, and I'm like, going, this isn't, and the locals laughed. They thought, well, Mike, that's field corn. That's for cattle. You got to grow your own.
Now, it takes like an acre of corn to feed two or three cows for a season to make beef for maybe 100 people. How many people could you feed on an acre of fucking land for an entire year?
Well,
if they ate vegetables, you know, if they ate the fucking produce from the land.
Well, I'll tell you that about 4 years into our 10-year stint here, we got wise and started gardening our asses off. Now, last year I didn't put in a good garden, but our best year was 2 years ago, and we grew over 250 quarts of green beans. And I picked that up from a lesson, from the pioneers in Kansas. Crazy white people that fell off the wagon, hit their head, and didn't know where they were at, landed at. They landed in Kansas on their way to Oregon, by the way, Mr. Oregon, and landed here, and they learned that they could grow beans, which had enough protein, and they could learn to preserve them, so that got them through the hard times in winter. And we grew 250 quarts and got through one really hard time where we were real poor and broke. We were eating 2 quarts a day during the dead of winter with rice and, of course, pasta and stuff like that. And we got through it. We had just enough money to every once in a while go out and buy some meat, and that was it.
And Michael, how much land were you growing your garden on?
And our garden is about 100 feet by 100 feet, wow, roughly.
And how big is an acre?
An acre is... 10 acres is 660 feet by 660 feet. That's 10
acres. So an acre then would be 66 feet by 66 feet.
Yeah, my garden's about a half an acre at the most. That's the whole boundary. That's not the actual rows or, you know. And what we learned, interesting enough, when we were growing this, a teacher up at the local elementary school came up to me out of her way and sat down with me during – I was up there, and she sat down quietly. She didn't want anyone to hear. She says, if you think the rest of the people in this county should go this way, I want you to know my parents broke their backs row crop and green beans. because I was advertising, you know, we need to eat our own, well, grow our own as possible. And she gave me this little scolding, you know. So that bothered me, you know. So I went back and we built these trellises. You know, we got to think about old people having to stoop over and, you know, pick beans. It is backbreaking. So we put them on, we for about $200, we got galvanized wire and some T-posts, some fence posts, metal fence posts, and put up a series of arches, pretty things that those rich folks have in the backyards, those trellises made out of wrought iron. Well, we stole that idea and used fence posts and made these arches. And we put vine pole beams on it. Man, we did fine. It was a great way. You didn't have to bend over anymore, and you could pick your beans, just go through and pick your beans. Hell, even plant a few morning glories in there, you know.
They use stoner.
And that got us our 250 quart canning at the end of the season. We didn't do a lot of it, but what sprung out of it has been a lot of our neighbors have started. Young people, I don't mean to talk down, like you guys, your age is, I don't know about Oregon, but your age, Franklin, they start getting into gardening themselves and doing shit. And hell, we were going around picking up all these old rich farmers, these big landowners, these corn farmers. They have apple trees. They don't even pick their apples up. So we go out in their yards and pick up their apples for free, and then we bring them home and can them and make applesauce. And
shit, yeah, like, you know, that's something interesting you're talking about right now. In St. Louis City, now this is a city, some of the comrades of ours have put together a map of wild fruit map of all the fruit trees that grow wild in the city. I know that L.A. has this. I know, I'm pretty sure Portland has this, but these people have mostly cyclists that cycle around the city a lot. They've been keeping an eye on trees that produce fruit, and they've created a map of these trees that are just growing in people's front yards that produce, you know, enough fruit to feed anybody for a while, and it's free. So they put out these maps now. You can just get it and bike around, pick an apple here, a pear here, some peaches here. Missouri and Kansas both pretty good about having the ability with the climate to grow all these fruits. And, you know, I think that's an interesting form of resistance that people don't even realize is resistance. But it's absolutely resistance. You know, you don't have to go to the market to pick up these vegetables that are flown in. You know, the peaches that we get are from California or Mexico. The tomatoes are from California. I live in Missouri. That's 2,000 miles that a tomato has to travel to hit our plate. Well, shit, I got six tomato plants right now that are producing more tomatoes than we need.
You know, here in Portland, there's a relatively strong gardening community, at least in the area that I live in. And actually close personal friends of mine have become friends with others in their neighborhoods who also grow food, and they trade a lot of stuff, you know, huge bounties of stuff. And it's actually, they enjoy it. And more importantly, you know, maybe they realize it, maybe they don't, but they're undermining an incredibly fucked market. And you know, it's really fantastic. It's a really great possibility that if only more people would sign on for that, especially in Kansas.
Here's some impeding problems with that, though, is with the new bill that, that's been put forth that just passed the House, and it's looking like it might pass the Senate. It's a bill to regulate even gardened food if you have a large garden patch. Now, we're not talking about backyard gardeners. We're talking about people that have gardens that go to farmers markets. They're going to have to be regulated by the FDA. What's going to eventually come out of this, according to the language of the bill, is that if you're raising organic, then you have to have a certain amount of chemical introduction to make the food safe. And the best way that they're promoting to have the safest food is to use Monsanto GMOs because they're resistant without adding any other chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at Monsanto completely taking over the market, completely taking over our food. And the food that they're producing, these GMOs, have been proven to be so lacking in nutrition that to eat them is like drinking water, but it's not giving you what water gives you. It's not even as nutritious as water. The water that you're getting out of the corn isn't even as nutritious as the water out of your tap, which is full of fluoride anyway. But What's going to happen here is people are literally going to starve to death with full stomachs. This is going to be the first country in the history of the world that's going to have a famine with a kitchen full of food.
Well, it's good to consider that the repercussions of aggressive control of food supply consistently leads to either an ironic food shortage like the one you just described, Michael, or a more literal one. Consistently, these type of things are always designed to, quote, protect us, always designed for, quote, public health. And inadvertently what it does is it creates a framework in which the civilization or the civilians become incredibly hungry and are forced to rely on the very organization that put them in that position.
Right. Well, scarcity has been the tool of the state for I don't know how long. You know, it's always scarcity that convinces people that we need to have some kind of a governing body with a military because shit's running out. So it's, you know, food's getting scarce. But in America, you can't push that. You can't push that to the average American that food's running out because we know how abundant food is here. Even though there are people starving all over the place in this country, it would be a hard sell to say to the American public that food is running out and get them to really believe it. That only happens to poor brown people on the other side of the world, but not here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so scarcity is going to have to come in a whole new way.
Things that happened out here when I first moved here. I'm an isolated area, but I'm 8 miles to one town, village, by your definition, 4.5 miles to another. And there's only one grocery store in 8 miles here. The one that was open 4 miles in another village north of me closed. And that sent a shock. When the gas got high 2 years ago or whatever, it's filling stations. And some of these towns only have one. Some of these villages have a filling station, and that's it. And many, many of the working class youth that are skilled and have families commute 50 and 60 miles a day to their places where they can get a big enough paycheck to pay their homes and support their families. So,
which, by the way, is another definition of something being unsustainable.
Right. You know? And they begin. And well, I've been at work out here in the counter. Well, I don't know what you call it. I guess I'm a hillbilly anarchist, but. I've been out here with people working, and surprisingly, many disenchanted young Democrats, and many disaffected Republicans who have made themselves undeclared, are beginning to really seriously take into this thing about energy and food autonomy. Autonomy meaning something what I overheard on the phone before I realized that you were taking my call about, it's not necessarily not paying your taxes or anything. It's just you don't need to pay taxes because you don't need as much money. You don't make as much money because you're not part of you're not the little squirrel in the what do you call it, the flywheel or the hamster or something, you know, running the treadmill, you know.
Right.
Yep, the yuppie running the treadmill, the hamster running the gerbil running the...
Well, that's why they call it a rat race.
What's the difference? A yuppie and a gerbil, what's the difference? Why?
Well, I'll tell you the difference. Most yuppies haven't been in Richard Gere's ass. there's a joke from the mid-90s for your ass right there.
Shit, I love Pretty Woman. Fucking Julia Roberts.
Okay, so well, on that note, since we're talking about that autonomy, I want to play a song, and it's dedicated to some people in this world who have decided to take shit into their own hands, the Somali Pirates. And this song is by a good friend of mine and a good friend of yours. And this goes out to the Somali Pirates because fuck, why not?
All right, I'm going to mute my phone. Thank you.
This is a song about a very militant social movement that had its golden age in the beginning of the 17th century. Come all you sailors near and far, you honest men know who you are. All of you who dare be free, come bind with us upon the sea. Together we will drink a toast, ride the wind on down the coast.
see the merchant shift aboard, raise a jar and swing a sword. Watch to see the merchant captain crying when they see the black flag flying. The war with Spain is over now. No more Jack over the bow. We fight for no one but our class. We're gonna kick some captain's ass. All you who live before you die, come give an honest life a try. Sail beneath the skull and bones. Pay no heed to crowns and thrones. No more greedy princes lying when you come sail with a black flag flying. No more whips and no more chains. To live free or die is what remains. If life is too short either way, you might as well live free today. All for one and one for all, we'll board the ship and make the call. Join us, all you good men, and have your liberty again. Watch the crew now leave their captain frying as they come sail with the black flag flying. Roberts brave and true, and Mary Kelly's gallant crew. Seems to me the world is ours. Watch as the mighty navy cowers. We have no nation but the sea. No creed but that we will live free. Loot and burn all that we can. That's run by a dishonest man. Their end is near. There is no denying when they see the black flag flying. I could predict the future, then I would. But all I know is this is good. 1720 is the year. There is nothing left to fear. We may live or we may die. Perhaps our destiny is nigh. I don't know what the end may hold, but I know these ships are filled with gold that was stolen from the poor as we lay dying. So let us sail with a black flag flying.
I just have the volume turned down.
All right, that's David Rovix right there, everybody. And for anybody out there listening right now, David is on tour, as he always is, and right now he's in Australia. Let's see, what are his dates here? On Tuesday, he's at the Poverty Bay Club in Gisborne. Wednesday, he's at the Mosaic Church in Mount Maunganamu. Thursday, he's at the Wine Cellar at St. Kevin's Arcade, and that's in Auckland. But then Friday, he's in Venice, California, this Friday, at a Free Gaza event. So anybody out there in the California area, you know where Venice is. That is at Cordell Hall at the Venice United Methodist Church, and he's there with Omar Afendim doing a Free Gaza event. And he's doing another Free Gaza event in Glendale on Saturday. And then, yeah, that's it for this week for David. So go check out davidrovix.com if you like the song. There's a link there to download over 250 songs for free of his, and that's just one of them. And he'll be coming to the St. Louis area here pretty soon, playing at Webster University. And he lives just down the street from you, Travis. So
No shit. Wow, does he ever play in Portland?
No, he hates Portland. Oh. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, of course he plays in Portland. but most often you can find him playing in the park with his daughter, Layla, and having a good time. So
no kidding. That's good to know.
And he loves good coffee, so send him an email. He's a very approachable guy. His phone number's on his website, davidrovix.com. Give him a ring, and yeah. So now that we've gone through that break there, we could do one of two things. I'll leave it up to consensus of the chat room and anybody that wants to call in. The phone number is 646-200-3974. We could either go to a discussion about this week's topic, healthcare, or we could hit This Week in Radical History right now. if we get into discussion about healthcare, I fear that we will run out of time to play This Week in Radical History, and it's an episode, it's a show that I really want to play. We were supposed to play it in the first hour, but we got to talking. So what do you guys think? Everybody hit it up in the chat room right now. Do you want This Week in Radical History right now, or do you want to talk about healthcare and then go back to that?
Are we voting? That's fucked up.
It's consensus, dude.
It's fucked up.
Well, you know, I got a bunch of anarchists in the room because they're not putting anything in the chat room.
Yeah, that's exactly. You know, they're like, dude, I don't want to like live and let live, bro.
Oh, my God. Anarchists are the new hippie. It's ridiculous.
I know.
Okay, I got one radical history hit right there.
All right. I guess that's right. Consensus, technically.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if one person votes, I mean, it's fascist, but it's fascist consensus. So,
I'm an anarcho-fascist.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. Yeah, you and the Easter Bunny. Both hanging out in fucking la-la land of non-existence. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and hit up This Week in Radical History then right now. And it's a good segment, about 16 minutes long. You in for that, Trav?
I'm in.
What about you, Mr. Cadell? No, he's on mute. I mean, I don't have him muted. He has himself muted. Don't put yourself back in, Michael. I'm going to play This Week in Radical History, and I'm playing it with Michael Cadell Technologies, so and you'll know what that means. Here it is, everybody, This Week in Radical History.
Welcome to Death Panel, where a court to Sarah Palin, Barack Obama will decide whether or not to kill her parents and Down syndrome baby.
Please don't kill my parents and Down syndrome, baby.
This panel sentences them to death.
This death panel is pure evil.
Evil.
Evil. Oh, it's just a horrible dream. Thank God we have a for-profit health insurance industry that never, ever denies health care to people. Am I right?
That was Look Back at Last Week in History, and you're about to hear This Week in Radical History for the week starting August 17th.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
This Week in Radical History is produced from the mobile fortress of Glee Glee Studios. Special thanks this week to the Radio Roots crew from WBAI in New York City for some audio that I'm borrowing for this week's show, an example of which you're about to hear right now.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, August 17th in 1893, the controversial white American actress and playwright Mae West was born in Queens, New York. Mae West began her successful onstage career at a young age. She later wrote and starred in her first Broadway play entitled Sex, which riled up city officials and landed Mae West in jail for public obscenity. Her next play, The Drag, was about gay transgendered men and was completely banned from Broadway. Even in Hollywood, Mae West continued to shock the world with her risque and sexual material, and her work was constantly being censored. During her career, West performed two radio sketches that were apparently outrageous enough to panic the FCC and get her banned from the NBC network.
You go, girl.
Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you never let the past slip away.
Debunking the myth that America was founded on religious freedoms, on August 18, 1634, our Bane Grandier is burned at the stake for being a witch. Also on August 18, 1941, in a letter to President Roosevelt, Representative John Dingell suggests incarceration of 10,000 Hawaiian Japanese Americans as hostages to ensure, quote, good behavior on the part of Japan, unquote. Also on August 18, 1977, South Africa, Steve Binko, a leading student apartheid resistor, was arrested in Port Elizabeth, later while in custody, murdered. To quote Steve Binko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Lastly, for August 18, 1996, the prison population rises to nearly 1.6 million inmates, double the number of a decade ago, the Justice Department said. This week in Radical History for August 19th, 1503, thou shalt not kill. Well, tell that to Pope Alexander VI, who dies accidentally of poison intended for his guests. Also on this date in 1692 in the New World, five people, including the town's former minister, hung in Salem for witchcraft. There is a long list of religious persecution in the New World, like the followers of Thomas Morton, who set up a trading colony upstate from the Puritans' Plymouth colony. This colony was much more successful than the Puritans' colony, for they actually treated the area natives as friends rather than hated Indians. Morton's colony had a live-and-let-live attitude, which included the monthly dancing around the Maypole dance celebration. The Puritans could have none of that, and struck down Morton's colony, destroying it by force. The long, long line of religious persecution in the world not only included Morton's colony and supposed witches, but anyone not of the Puritans' faith like Quakers who were regularly forced out of the New World colonies. Yep, America's founded on religious freedom. True, as long as that religious is pious enough. Otherwise, they're destroyed by the evangelical zealots. On August 19, 1911, Mexican troops battle for the anarchist Zapatista-controlled cities. Also on that day, 1953 in Iran, troops overthrow liberal-leaning premier and put the pro-Western dictator in power in a coup directed by the CIA, all to protect the American interests. Also on that date, 1958, NAACP Youth Council begins sit-in at desegregated lunch counters in Oklahoma. Also on that date, 1971, H.R. Haldeman, President Nixon's hatchet man, orders an FBI investigation of CIA news correspondent Danielle Shore, who had analyzed the president's speech, quote, unfavorably, unquote. Lastly, on August 19, 1989, South Africa Nobel Peace Prize winner Bishop Desmond Tutu are among hundreds of black demonstrators who are whipped and sandblasted by helicopters as they attempt to picnic on the white-only beaches near Cape Town. This week in Radical History for August 20th, 150 years plus before the official founding of America, on this date in 1619, the first group of 20 African slaves land in Jamestown, Virginia.
This is your Radio Root reporter, Maria Tumbawala. On this day, August 20th, in 1831, Nat Turner led a huge slave uprising in Southampton County, Virginia. The revolt began with only six followers, but eventually gained the support of approximately 60 slaves, who traveled from house to house murdering white slave owners and freeing slaves. 57 whites were killed. Although Nat Turner managed to escape the pursuing militia for 6 weeks, he was eventually arrested and brutally executed. In the months that followed, 55 black people suspected of being involved in Nat Turner's rebellion were executed, and hundreds were beaten, tortured, and slaughtered by angry white mobs. While controversial, Nat Turner is viewed by many as a heroic symbol of black resistance to oppression. A little too militant for American Black History Month. Yeah, I said it.
Also on August 20th, 1886, sentences are handed down against the Haymarket trial defendants, found guilty despite obvious innocence. Seven anarchists are condemned to death. The hangings of the seven innocent men will take place on November 11th, 1887. Lastly, for August 20th, 1998, U.S. cruise missiles pound targets in Sudan and Afghanistan and accidentally in Pakistan, targeting pharmaceutical industry factories, maker of anti-malaria and veterinarian drugs. Cruise missiles precisely target and destroy the factories. Quote, there is no sanctuary for terrorists and no limit to the resolve to defend American citizens and our interests, or our ideals of democracy and laws, unquote, says Clinton's U.S. Defense Secretary William Cohen. Still later, the U.S. finally confessed that it erred in claiming that the plant was manufacturing storing nerve gas or any link to Osama bin Laden, as was previously stated. Oops, my bad.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, August 21st, in 1971, Black Panther member and political prisoner George Jackson was shot dead by prison guards while attempting to escape from San Quentin prison. At the time he was killed, Jackson was incarcerated for the murder of a white prison guard. The killing of the guard had been in retaliation for the earlier murder of three black activists in a nearby prison, in which case the guard was acquitted and the murders ruled justifiable homicide. Jackson had become politicized, The first time he was locked up at the age of 18, and he quickly earned a reputation as a black revolutionary. There are even some speculations that the FBI was involved in the assassination of George Jackson as part of their COINTELPRO mission to eliminate all radical black social resistance. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
This week in Radical History for August 22nd, I only got a couple items. 1692, 8 more persons hung in Salem, Massachusetts, charged with witchcraft. Also on August 22nd, 1968, Remy Davis tells Chicago city officials it would be, quote, suicide, unquote, not to allow demonstrators during the Democratic National Convention to sleep in city parks. Tomorrow, Officer Friendly posts 11 p.m. curfew signs in park trees at Lincoln and Grand Parks. The whole world will be watching the Chicago police beating and gassing everyone and everybody they can get their hands on. Lastly, for August 22nd, 1972, police arrest 891 over 2 days as thousands of anti-war protesters disrupt the Miami Beach Convention of the Republican Party.
This is your Radio Root reporter, Maria Tumbawala. On this day, August 22nd, in 1989, black activist Huey P. Newton was shot dead while walking along a street in Oakland, California. Newton had become involved with campus activism while attending Oakland City College years earlier. After connecting with Bobby Seale, the two organized the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense in 1966. The organization's radical view against the oppressive social structure of the American government and its confrontation of Oakland's racist police force gained them a quick reputation with the FBI. After his release from a short stint in prison, Newton renounced political violence and forced his activism on beneficial community outreach programs. Newton was allegedly murdered by a drug dealer, and the media used this idea to rip apart Newton's reputation and devalidate him as a positive community leader. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
This week in Radical History for August 23rd, 1500 New World, Christopher Columbus, accused of mistreatment of natives in Haiti, is arrested and sent back to Spain in chains. Could have threw him overboard and saved us a lot of trouble. Also on August 23rd, 1911, Ishi, last member of a Stone Age tribe in America, is discovered in California. For a great book about Ishi coming out of the wilderness into the white world, see the book Ishi of Two Worlds. Also on August 23, 1917, riots occur in Houston, Texas, when the 24th Infantry seeks revenge to the city's white police after a brutal beating of two black regimental soldiers. After 2 hours of violence, 15 whites, including 4 policemen, are killed and 18 more are injured. 4 soldiers died. 118 soldiers are charged in connection with the riots, and 19 are executed, most in almost total secrecy, and one of the most infamous court-martials ever involving African-Americans. More short items for August 23rd, 1946. 3 white men are fined $10 in Collins, Mississippi, for the attempted rape of 3 black women at gunpoint. And justice for all. Also on that date in 1962, boys with a hard-on for Castro, JFK administration approves a massive covert sabotage effort against Cuba. Lastly, for August 23rd, 1996, today the net worth of the world's 358 richest people equal the combined income of the poorest 45% of the world's population. That's 2.3 billion people. Once again, way back in 1996, and it's gotten worse since then, 358 people have as much wealth as 2.3 billion people.
Everybody has to pay taxes. Even businessmen that rob and steal and cheat from people every day. Even they have to pay taxes.
You have been listening to This Week in Radical History. Inspiration came from the Slingshot Calendar organizer, and more radical historical info came from the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website. Speaking of inspiration, some down peeps that produced Anarchy Now are also doing a live weekly anarchist ditty. Check out Bottom Up Radio Network or BURN each and every Sunday night starting at 8 p.m. Central Time Zone. And the place you can tune into this anarcho-radical perspective is blogtalkradio.com/rabble. Again, Sundays, 8 p.m. at blogtalkradio.com/RABBLE. Got the bolt. We leave you musically this week with Holy, 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 but this last reminder that I never really leave you, for I'm forever yours in the struggle, Mike Cannon.
The world is... We made a golden curse.
some anarchist affiliation that have been causing problems of breaking windows, rioting throughout the town.
All right, so that was This Week in Radical History by our comrade on the East Coast, Mike Cannon. He's a down motherfucker, looks like Tank from the Animals. Remember the World Wrestling Federation?
Is that the guy who's playing Middle Earth in the chat room?
No, that's Nate.
All right.
Nate looks like Danny DeVito.
Nate's my Oh, God bless him. I like Nate. I'm good buddies with Nate. We're close.
Yeah, I know, because neither one of you have ever seen a vagina.
Mm.
No offense, Randy Lou. That's the weird thing. You have a beautiful wife. Why are you still playing games?
I have a very, very beautiful wife, and she tolerates my nerddom, so God bless her.
I guess. Maybe it's what it allows her to actually go have sex with a real man while you're at game night.
Yeah, no, exactly. I wonder why she was so stoked on Thursday night.
So the phone lines are open, 646-200-3974. You are listening to Bottom Up Radio Network. Network. Network.
You know, I'm not even getting paid for this shit. This is fucking, I'm doing this for free. Can you
believe
that?
I'm getting paid.
In fact, it's
time right now to go to one of our advertisers right now. This is paid advertisement from Barack Obama and the New World Order with their theme song.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
That's right, folks. Barack
He's got
Obama.
My brothers and my sisters. In his hands,
he's got everybody in his goddamn hands.
In his hands, he's got my brothers and my sisters.
But, you know, on to more advertising. I think it's important to note that things have been pretty rough after 8 years of Bush, and it's a good thing that we've got Barack Obama. In fact, I think he's really going to clean things up. What do you think?
I think that using his great rhetoric and his vision for the future of hope and change, we will one day be angels.
I think so. Oh, wait. I hear another advertising song coming on for Barack Obama.
Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute. Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute.
Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it.
Floors, doors, walls, halls, white sidewalls, tires, and old golf balls.
Sinks, stoves, bathtubs, he'll do. He'll even help clean laundry,
oh,
too.
Mr. That clean crazy gets rid of dirt and grime.
You know, you know, Tony Danza in Who's the Boss for Halloween, his character dressed up as Mr. Clean and he sang the song.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, shit.
So, okay,
you know,
so let's get into some healthcare stuff. What
healthcare.
Do you think?
You know, Michael, if I could just start, I want to be in all seriousness. I think that, you know, this discussion, this debate, I love to see people, normal Americans, come together in a town hall setting to discuss a hot button issue and fight. God, it's awesome. You know, like some fucking red-cheeked baker from fucking Midwest, dude, bushy mustache, come out swinging? Dude, you can't get that shit on UFC. I can watch that shit for free on the YouTube.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's even better that while they're fighting in the audience, shit's still not changing, and for power. So, you know, I'm wondering why everybody's so wound up about this healthcare thing. You know, we are in war. We've been in war since 1920, so that's nothing new for us. We're pretty used to that. But, you know, everybody's screaming for this universal healthcare plan. They haven't even read what's in this plan.
Well,
not
we don't need to do that. I don't read. Fuck reading.
Well, it's like they're selling it to us like it's some kind of magic antidote, and you know, you got to ask the antidote for what.
Well, that's the question. Is you know, you've got one side.
That antidote.
What?
the poison. You just drink up.
Dude, I love the sound effects. I sign on for the sound effects completely. I'm totally,
I wish they would work a little quicker because I wanted to follow right my antidote thing. We got your new best friend on line three or here. Let's go welcome in, Comrade Nachman.
Comrade
Nachman. By the way, everybody, just for in the interest of full disclosure, is an anarcho-communist.
Sweet.
You're on the line, Nachman. Are you there?
I am there.
I can barely hear you.
I don't look anything like Danny DeVito.
Uh-oh. What's the sound, Nachman?
Welcome to the Weakest Link.
It's great, Nock, when I even get to make fun of you on the internet.
Yeah,
are you there?
I love Danny DeVito, so fuck it.
Yeah, he was great in Jack the Bear.
Oh, dude, Jack the Bear. Oh, man, my wife and I both cried when we watched that shit.
Yeah, Jack the Bear.
Man, Taxi. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's great in that. I just think it goes on and on.
Oh my god.
So comrade, what do you got to say for yourself, brother?
Hey, Nachman. Nachman, why don't you not be poor and get a phone instead of trying to use your computer to call us so we can actually hear what you're saying?
Yeah, seriously, your dial-up internet is really bumming me out, dude.
I don't have dial-up. Do you want me to call you on my phone?
Yeah?
Can you hear me now? No, I can't hear you now. Yeah, call back on your phone, Nachman, just because we can't hear you, and I want to hear what you had to say. So give us a call back. All right, so we got 30 minutes left in the show, everybody. We do want to hit on healthcare, and that's what I would like to steer this conversation towards because I am a fascist, and I will be steering the conversation along with my cohort. Not a co-host, cohort. It's one letter difference.
No, and it means everything to me.
Okay, so this healthcare plan, I do want to get a little bit serious about this. I've been working on some ideas of how this works, and I was talking to a liberal the other day. That was me smacking myself for doing such things. But talking to that liberal, I actually picked up on something. She was saying, why is the private sector throwing such a fit? None of this would be happening if it weren't for the private sector denying so many claims over the years and not playing by the rules. Then people wouldn't be in need of universal health care. And it fucking went off. I wish I had a bell sound in my sound effects thing here, because here we go. That's what it was like. It went off like a buzzer. It's quite obvious that for some time, in fact, I would say since the beginnings of our established country, the private sector has been the most influential and most important part of our government. In fact, in the constitutional debates, James Madison even said that this country should be one that protects the opulent minority from the majority, meaning that landowners and private business should be protected from the masses of people who don't have what they need. And so if they're working hand in hand, and if you read the evil implications of this healthcare reform bill, I'm talking Orwellian implications of if you've read Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, they talk about, which is another Orwellian-style fascist state novel, where they talk about how control over the people came through the control of bank accounts. And this is a biblical thing as well, but which just proves that it's been happening for at least 2,000 years, ever since a white man got in power, thank you, Jesus. So what's happened here is in this healthcare reform bill, they are saying that they're going to have access to bank accounts of all people that are on universal healthcare, as well as their health index. They're going to check you out by a government-approved doctor, and put you on a health index, put all of your information into a database, and be able to see who is healthy and who is not healthy, meaning who is important and who is not important to the fascist state. And these are some really frightening implications, as well as the forced vaccinations of everybody under the health care plan. And we've already discussed how dangerous these things can be. So why would we want this health care plan? Because for the last 35 to 40 years, private sector insurance companies have been denying claims. They've boosted their rates. They've made it impossible for the population to use their services. This is in a competitive market, by the way. And, Travis, you know a lot about the market. In a competitive market, they have outcompeted themselves to the point where a small part of the population are covered by health insurance through the private sector health insurance plan, making the larger part of the people beg and scream for full coverage insurance because we all need health care of some sort. And so they've gotten to the point where they're willing to accept anything handed to them. And as long as it's given to them by black-faced Messiah, Obama, then it's got to be good in these people's eyes because anything is better than nothing. But they've attached so much poison, so many barbs on these hooks that they're sending out to the fish in the sea here, that I don't understand why people would accept this as something that we need.
If I could talk on the show, first of all, okay, I am the fucking co-host. Dick!
I can control the mute button if you'd like.
If you were in my game, dude, I'd crush you. And you know what I'm talking about.
It's all about the percentiles.
Shit.
How many geldings would that be worth? How many geldings would it cost to get you to shut the fuck up?
It's not geldings, it's gnomes, first of all. So, anyway, dude. Okay.
Hey, Noam Chomsky is a good friend of mine, okay? I consider the guy to be great.
Aw, snap.
Don't be
name
bringing
drop.
Chomsky into the anarchist conversation here, bud.
name drop. It's interesting to me to look at the discourse going on between the two parties, because one party wants this heavily intrusive system that they're not really educated about. The other side preserves this, prefers the system we have now, which is, as you said, an insurance cartel, which has gained control over it and been able to deny most people to their services while still making unbelievable amounts of money. It's important to note that these insurance companies are sizable special interest groups and are responsible in part, if not at most, to lobbying to get legislation passed that grants them contracts which shrinks the market. It's competitive in the sense that there's a few companies that compete with each other, but it's not in the freedom context where there's an infinite amount of choices, including mutual aid, which I'm a firm proponent of in terms of providing health care to the masses, or to those at least who really, really need it and are whatever. That's an entirely different conversation.
Along those lines, we should have pirate doctors. I really do.
Fuck yeah, dude.
I'm talking about the doctors and the nurses who've been fighting like hell for universal health care because they, more than anybody, understand the necessity for this thing, the necessity for everybody to have health care. And most of the doctors and nurses really want to be able to give health care to people that are in need. They should just start doing it. Just open the doors to the hospital, steal the supplies, and fuck it. Honestly.
Well, we've seen mutual aid work before in this country. During the Great Depression, mutual aid was a major form of health care, and it was promptly shut down by the state, although it was left open for, of course, minorities. But everyone else had to pay, and I mean that in the sense that the state jumped in and shut it down. So mutual aid has existed in America before, and it did serve its purpose, and it was not the people that shut it down or the consumers that shut it down. It was the state that shut it down.
What's your hypothesis on why it was left open for the minorities?
This is history. During the Great Depression, mutual aid societies came forward. It was, younger doctors started to offer health care to those who were poor and impoverished, and eventually they started to get cited for maybe being a couple of beds short, different little technicalities like that. They started to get citations, and it started to cost them more money, and eventually they were worked out of the system, and this was in collusion with the American Medical Association was a big backer of this. It was, again, all in the interest of public health and safety. And so they were shut down, but they were left open. And this is history. They were left open for minorities, but because of course we don't want black people to come into white hospitals. So mutual aid.
Okay, that's what you're saying. So these people that knew how to work together in communities, the only communities that they could stay sustainable in were communities of poor people and people of color, not because that it was so good to treat poor people and people of color, but it was because they didn't want them in the rich white hospitals.
Right, because this is during the Great Depression when segregation was still running rampant and all of that. And I think that it's important to look at...
Well, you say that as if it's not anymore.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. It still is like that. It's just in a more soft and fuzzy, glorified kind of way. You know, it's like, what is it? Something like, you know, I've watched The Wire, and so I know a lot about Baltimore. But, you know, I've looked up some statistics of Baltimore, and, you know, with one in six people in jail in the city of Baltimore, we can see that, you know, there still is actively legitimized segregation going on in a specific demographic. And those same numbers apply also to the medical industry as well. And another thing that I think is important to note is that it's interesting to look at two parties fighting over two systems that are both evil. The insurance cartel is not a preferable system. It is an evil system. It's meant to keep out the poor. It's meant to benefit the rich. It's not meant to provide health care to the public at large. The socialized system, in like manner, is not meant. It's meant to benefit the majority of the voters. And it's really important that any listeners think about this, that these programs, while conceptually, are awesome. I absolutely get behind the idea of mutual aid, and I absolutely get behind of providing for ourselves sustainably through our community. But when the X factor is always going to be the state doing it, it's always going to come with intrusive things. It's always going to come with a lot of monitoring of private behavior. You know, eventually, can you get high and still get health insurance? Probably not. It'll just take time and a lot of very subtle
legislation. Well, no, that's actually part of the health insurance reform is mandatory drug testing. So that it doesn't take much time at all. But you were talking about the two different evils. I want to look a little bit bigger at the bigger picture. Let's look at who's sitting on the boards of big insurance and who's
right.
sitting on the boards of big pharma. And you'll see that a lot of it's one and the same. It's the same people sitting on both boards. People will say, well, in the market, you have to be accountable to your shareholders. So if you're not profitable, that's why the private sector is going so mad, because if they don't stay profitable – then they're going to go out of business and their shareholders are going to lose, so they're going to get shut down. But the people sitting on the boards there also sit on the boards of Big Pharma, and Big Pharma has interest in this because right now our population, maybe 50% of the population or less, is their customer base. After universal health care, their population, the population of their customer base is what? 100% of the population would be their customers. 100%. This is the most genius business plan. It only took 30 years to play out. And guess who's getting money from both sides? Guess who's getting influence from both sides? Barack Obama and Obama's administration. Because his entire cabinet is Wall Street. His entire cabinet is business. And when you run something as important as healthcare and people's lives like a business, and you're going to choose what's profitable. And if it's not profitable, then it's not doable. So the state is doing this because it profits the state, not because it helps the people.
No, and it helps, quote unquote, helps just enough people, and by people I mean voters, to keep the systems going. And that's the way
I disagree. I don't think it has to do with voters. I think it helps enough people who would eventually stand in revolt, keep their mouths shut, just like welfare, food stamps, and HUD have kept the poor population of this country just enough food on the table and just enough money in their pockets to pay just enough bills to keep them from an all-out revolt of the poor. It's a buyout.
Well,
and not only is it a buyout on that side, but it gives you a scapegoat.
I would say, Michael, that it's maybe a combination of both. I mean, because I absolutely agree with you. It's a great way to satiate the people is to give them just enough scraps from the table to keep them just simmering instead of all-out boiling. But it also a lot of those folks also vote, and if they're considering a system where you're picking the lesser of the evils, which by the way is still evil, you're going to go for the person who gave you scraps from the table as opposed to the person who gave you less or even none. And again, a lot of these folks do vote, and they typically, you know, when people vote, they vote for the person they think is going to be most likely to give them stuff they need. And this isn't an issue of like selfish, lazy. All of that is irrelevant. This is about looking at things that we obviously need. And when we're continuously supporting and perpetuating a system that guarantees us that it's in our best interest that it exists, then...
Well, you know, according to polls, historically Democrats in the last 20 years have voted against war. And Republicans have voted against abortion. So neither one of them are getting what the fuck they're voting for.
Oh, no. Not at all.
This has always been interesting to me. You talk to them and they're like... Like, all right, why do you vote Republican? Because I'm pro-life. Uh-huh. Why do you vote Democrat? Well, because I'm against the war. Uh-huh. Why do you go to McDonald's? Because I love Mexican food.
Yeah. God, I do love Mexican food, too.
Dude, Mexican food's good.
Dude, my wife made the best fucking enchiladas. We've been eating on it for like 2 days. Best in the city. So fucking bomb. But, yeah, I mean, dude, I just had a couple beers, and I've been smoking a little resin, so.
Well, we do have a caller on the line who does have a little bit of interest in healthcare. We talked to him before. Michael Cadell, are you unmuted and ready to talk?
Yes, I am. I'm on speakerphone. Hold on just a minute.
Oh, you sound fine on speakerphone if it leaves your hands free. You do sound fine, really.
You sound fantastic.
All right, well, you know, I think the principal contradiction in medical care for the people is probably best illustrated by the barefoot doctors in China during the Cultural Revolution, or the doctors in who went to El Salvador and worked, or went to Nicaragua and crossed borders from El Salvador
during Reagan's 80s.
Huh?
During Reagan's 80s.
Yes. Right. Yeah, I'm an old man.
But, yeah, I want to put it in historical context for people. That way they, you know,
thanks.
Why would they go to El Salvador?
Yesterday, they were raping nuns and killing nuns down there, and I never forgot it, you know.
I love James. James Woods is awesome, by the way. Anyway,
yeah, that's
good.
Yeah. But really, the contradiction now, and I think President Obama sort of hit it on the head, although he's getting scoured and skewed by... like the McLaughlin Group and other, the conservative, well, hell, all the mainstream media networks. But he pointed out about surgeons. It's like, well, I got a diabetic coming in here, and we'll just fix it by, we'll just amputate his leg. That'll be $30,000. The government will pay me, you know, several thousand dollars to just amputate the leg rather than to teach him preventative health care. Primary care physicians in the United States are one step above a high school teacher when it comes to pay. Primary care versus specialty. And capitalism, over the last 30 or 40 years in medical education, the factories that churn out the doctors, has consciously channeled medical care into specializations, where you've got different kinds of specialties, surgeons and stuff, and they're all chasing million-dollar dreams, you know, and work 4 hours a day, slashing and burning human flesh, and poisoning humans. And
wait, are you talking about politicians or doctors?
Well, I'm not sure between lawyers, doctors. I don't know what's the difference. I mean, is there's all the same skin of the fish. You know?
Yeah, I definitely don't think it would be smart of us to separate Obama from that.
Well,
to think that Obama is any different. To think that Obama can't bring forth.
I'm trying to point out how they're going after who you call the Black Messiah, and they're eviscerating this guy, and they're organizing a social base, like the teabaggers, the birthers, you know. The Blue Dog Democrats, the so-called Blue—I don't know where the Red Dog Democrats are—but you know that what they're doing is they're doing everything they can to destroy the so-called Black Messiah. But I think what Obama is trying to do, he's changed his rhetoric just in the last few days. It's no longer health care for all. It was very guarded at that at the beginning of his campaign when he was campaigning for president. But now it's health insurance reform. And this is an interesting change in his rhetoric, and I think that's a conscious wording done by his policy managers. And frankly, I think it's not going to get any better. Healthcare is going to become worse and worse, as well as the condition of the United States. I think we're in for some hard times. One of the economists I listen to, who's sort of a razzle-dazzle, Max Kaiser on maxkaiser.com, he has a guy who's, matter of fact, just out in Kansas City, Dr. Michael Hudson, who's published all widely, especially on Counterpunch. Michael Hudson, Dr. Michael Hudson says that this is going to be like, he says many economists say this is a V. They're arguing over it's going to be a V, meaning the recession will pull out of the recession. It will bottom out and go right back up with all these banker bailouts and all this shit. Then others say it's going to be a U. That's the argument. Now, Dr. Hudson, he says it's going to be an L. We're going to drop, and it's just going to stay down there. The issue is how long will it be before the teabaggers and the birthers and the pro-lifers and all the old people on Medicaid and Medicare who don't like socialism begin to realize that they better start fighting for their basic human rights, and health care, I consider that one of their basic human rights.
Well, you bring up an interesting thing with when you're talking about the teabaggers. There's a lot of media right now is pointing to the teabaggers, the town hall meetings, and the militias being on the rise. But if you look at the strict numbers of people in militias, there's really not a substantial amount of rise in the militias now than there was 10 years ago during Clinton, and they maintained through Bush. They were there, and they were still diligent. A lot of these militias don't have party politics in the fashion that you're thinking, that the media is saying. I think that the media is using these scare tactics of these right-wing uprisings as a divisive tactic to make us think that there's two sides, to put us at the point of, oh, there could be a civil war. There could be a civil war. And that's gonna make use of George Bush's final gift to Obama, NORCOM. 20,000 American troops came in on October 12th, 20,000 more since Obama's been in office. Troops on American soil to use in times of civil unrest. What easier topic to create civil unrest than to touch on the basic human need of health care and to make that a hot-button topic?
Well, I think that's you hit the nail on the head. I mean, again, this is a byproduct. This is what the machine does, is that the architects of this, they know what they're doing. They're smart people, and they know that. And, you know, I know I hate to use that all-encompassing word they, but it's true.
Well, there is that in them.
And they know that the people are going to freak out about something so basic. You know, they don't touch food because that might actually set off a real one. And I don't know that that's what they want, but at least in small bursts they'll encourage it, because to keep us divided is to keep us distracted. And to keep us distracted is for them to keep their fucking jobs. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Well, I don't think the force of the state is being used at any point this thing. I don't think they need to. I think they've got plenty of far-right people. My issue is, for me, is what's been going on in the left, what there is and there isn't much, arguments are going, well, maybe the so-called proletarian defense forces, the people in the unions, the people should be out there defending, maintaining order at the town hall, so-called town hall meetings. We have a congressman here, Congressman Dennis Moore, first district, I think he is, or third district, or east of me in Johnson County in mayonnaise land, and he He is a Democrat, the only Democrat on the Kansas congressional delegation, and he is not going to have any town hall meetings because he's received death threats. Now, this is coming from the state that kills abortion doctors, okay, or bombs their clinics. I know firsthand about that. But what I'm trying to point out is, what are you saying, Michael? Join the militias as an anarchist?
No. I'm saying don't join the media hype. I'm saying don't buy into this idea that we're under some internal threat before we examine the fact that we've been under an external threat by the powers that be for a long time. People always want to point to the neighbor who's the damaging one while the cop is the one with the gun on the street. My point is that power is and always has been and always will be a threatening force, and that the they we're talking about, the they is composed of people. And this is, I want to get this in before we got 6 minutes left in the show, and we made a dedication to real quick. We're going to get back to the conversation, but real quick, we made a dedication to the show that in the lineage and the words of Utah Phillips, this world is not dying, the earth is not dying, it's being killed, and those who are killing it have names and addresses. And so to keep with that, we're going to give Robert Parkinson, everybody, is the CEO of Baxter. And the address is 1 Baxter Parkway, Deerfield, Illinois, 60015-4625. Google map that. Robert Parkinson of Baxter. If you want to know who's killing the world and who you can fight against, it would be Robert Parkinson would be a good one to target. Now, I do want to say I'm not advocating violence, but I'm saying that if you happen to be in the neighborhood of 1 Baxter Parkway, Deerfield, Illinois, 60015, and Robert Parkinson's car happens to be there, you might want to have a direct talk with that CEO.
You missed me, brother. What is Parkinson doing? I mean, I don't doubt your judgment. I just want to know, could you tell the listeners, what does he do?
Yeah, we talked about Baxter before. Baxter is the company that gets the no-bid contracts for the vaccinations in this country.
Okay.
They also, sitting on the board of Baxter is one Donald Rumsfeld. And that's enough said, really. But if you want to get into the specifics of that, Rumsfeld's company before was the inventors of aspartame. That's GD and Searle, who he sold to Monsanto. He sold the company to them. They invented aspartame. They also invented Tamiflu. Tamiflu is the flu shot that you get. That's in the last 10 years, we're starting to see effects from Tamiflu now that are coming out that are some of the most nerve-damaging vaccinations in history. And this is all through Baxter now. Baxter is the company that we said before got the patent for the H1N1 virus vaccination a year before the outbreak. And they also got the no-bid contract for the vaccines. So if you're wondering why a guy's trying to sell you a chicken after your chicken was stolen from your backyard, you might want to ask the guy where he got the chicken. That's all I'm saying. And
cool.
Robert Parkinson at 1 Baxter Parkway, Deerfield, Illinois, 60015-4625 could answer where he got that chicken. That's all I'm saying. I love chicken too. We got 4 minutes left, so closing statements at all about healthcare. Let's go to our caller first. Michael Cadell, you got a minute to give us a rundown of your closing statement real quick. We didn't get too much cohesive conversation on this episode, and we can talk about this next week more and flesh it out. It's our first show, everybody, so we were excited. We were using all the gadgets and the conversation.
And the buttons and the sound effects.
The bells and whistles. But, Michael, give us a minute on your thoughts on this this healthcare reform and what's happening.
Well, I think people have to do what they can. Of course, healthcare for all is not going to happen. I think for America to step into the arena of civilized nations like England or Canada, which would be the most logical thing to do, and other countries where healthcare, it would require doctors be civil employees, much like the stormtroopers that are committing acts of genocide and committing war crimes in other countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. Perhaps they would probably commit similar crimes on the people, as you pointed out, with the use of drugs. But over a period of time, I think through the struggle, I know for a fact that doctors, many of them, if they are one of those people's doctors, they come to grips with the contradiction between the specialists, the surgeon, the slash and tear people, and the ones that just want to take care of the people. And I think that's the future for medicine in the United States if we're going to take this barbaric route, continuing this barbaric route of capitalism and the fatal nexus of health care. But I think
all right.
health care will I think in the end, even Obama making a government co-op run is an erosion of the outrageous rank capitalist rank, you know, this rank six-feeted monster called the health insurance company. I think a government co-op insurance company is going to be the future, and I think it will erode, hopefully, a little bit of the gross monster of U.S. imperialism.
All right, Travis?
I just, you know, my final words would simply be that when we talk about health care being provided by, as he said, the six-footed monster or by the 11-footed monster called the state, I think that it's important to realize who, in fact, in these civilized nations and ours, who, in fact, we're asking to provide us with the things that we need. And we are asking murderers and thieves to also give us health care. It's like going to the Russian mafia and saying, hey, you know a good doctor? Okay, it's not the route to go. What we pay a heavy, heavy price when we ask these individuals to not only continue with the murder and genocide around the world, but to also provide us with doctors. And we need to realize what we sacrifice when we do that in the long term is maybe our souls, and it's a heavy, heavy price to pay, and we really need to consider that when we think about perpetuating this system. And that's all I got to say about it.
All right. My closing statement would be that bricks are more plentiful than ballots and create much more immediate change. So cast your ballot now. Go find a brick. Find an insurance conglomerate. Find a town hall. Find a cop car. Anything that represents the state, smash it right now physically. And I am saying this because until we create the physical change like that, we're not going to be able to deal with the ideological changes. And we have to understand that power only benefits power. It does not benefit the people. And if we rely upon these people to benefit us, we are taking a back seat, and the drunk driver is controlling the vehicle. We got 10 seconds left. Everybody, this is Burn Radio. Take a punch. Give a hug.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining in. Come next week. We got Derek Jensen. So tune in next week, everybody. Derek Jensen, author of Endgame, on Burn Radio. Find us on Twitter.